Hello and welcome to a Collector Box Light episode on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I will be opening up a subscription box and discussing the contents. The box in front of me now is the Firefly cargo crate for February 2017. It is about 11 inches by, we'll say 7 1/4 by 5 3/4-ish, a little over 5 1/2. Pretty standard size for this. It tends to be the same size, I think, every month.
Yeah, I don't see a sticker on the side I'm looking at. They usually have the sticker that ties into the theme.
They're blue.
Blue Sun is printed on the box.
And then it's on this side.
Oh, it's under the sticker that came.
So I have it go to a UPS store. UPS store puts a sticker on the thing. And because I can feel.
Yeah, an oval indentation. Okay.
So
the theme is extra well hidden this month.
Yeah.
The mystery box is extra mysterious.
By and large, the UPS store does a really good job, but I may give them a hard time for this. I may not.
Well, they spoil you rotten whenever possible.
Yeah, they, and again, I like it that having it go there versus here for both the comics and all the boxes and stuff means if I'm on vacation or something like that, I don't have to worry about somebody signing for it.
Don't have to worry about the weather, which in Texas is unpredictable.
Yeah. All right, so opening this up. Start with the shirt or the Minnie Mouse?
Shirt. I noticed you were baffled. I wondered why.
Wasn't baffled. I was debating. The shirt is the Lassiter Laser Pistol Mark I on a black shirt. It's kind of like the schematic for it or something. This was the gun that I think was kind of the MacGuffin in the Mrs. Reynolds episode, maybe?
That sounds right.
Which is good memory for a show that I haven't seen in quite some time.
Yeah.
We still need to do that. Matter of fact, I've got the DVD
somewhere
in this stack.
Yeah.
Yeah, right down here. Blu-rays, actually. We should watch those at some point.
Yeah, we should. Especially given Ron Glass passed away.
Yeah, so sad.
Yeah.
Very talented actor. Had been doing stuff for
decades.
Because he was on Barney Miller? He was on something back in the 70s.
Yeah.
Anyways, he was book and stuff and really good. So the Minnie Master figure is Saffron, which is
Mrs. Reynolds.
Mrs. Reynolds. This is the first time they've gone to a kind of a secondary character other than the ones that were in every episode.
Yeah.
So I would expect other ones they would do would be the Bounty Hunter Earl or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If they're including the movies, the guy from that, both Mr. Universe and the one who was going after him. Also,
Mark Shepard's character.
Mark Shepard's character, Weasel.
That sounds right, but I just can't think of the name for sure at the moment.
Yeah, but his character would be one of the other go-to ones, because he's one of the few that we saw multiple times.
And quite honestly, something involving the Fruity Odie bars, the little girls, the candy bar in general, it was such a jingle, etc. in the movie, that I think at some point something to do with that will make it into the boxes.
Yeah. So the sticker, and it's good that they include one inside, is Bellerophon.
As I recall, they have a set of travel posters to the planets that were in the verse. And I think these stickers kind of key off of those posters.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next up, we've got Interplanetary Flashcard, set number 2. And one of them is a Bellerophon, another is Osiris, and the other is just the backing card to keep the thing from getting bent.
Which is thoughtful.
And there's actually stuff on the back of them. And they're postcardish size.
Yeah, with very nice artwork on the front.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
We've got one of the Firefly Cubits PVC figures, and it's one of the characters, but it's a blind box. So we actually.
Oh!
It's Moana. No, I think it's I think it's River. Yes.
Yes.
And I know exactly who you're going to tell that story to tomorrow.
Yes. And it's funny because that same person, I just sent them a link to a game that I couldn't figure out how to play, but it was princesses and Hogwarts. And you put the Disney princesses through the Hogwarts sorting hat system.
Mm.
So, yeah, and it was, I found it through a Moana thing. Yeah, that's funny.
These are the smaller ones, and they're a little bit more stylized than the bigger figures. The bigger figures are really good replicas. And again, not photorealistic. It's not like they scan the actors or something. It's iconic for the actors, but almost in a slightly caricaturish way.
Well, and part of it is they capture the iconic wardrobe, an iconic pose. They capture the essence of the character, as well as getting the face in a manner that you just glance at it and go, yeah, I feel like I saw that moment on screen.
Mm-hmm. The pin this time is Night Sweetie, which is, I guess, her catchphrase.
Wasn't she the one with the lipstick that knocked you out?
Yes. Yes, she was.
Yeah.
And because she was in two episodes, but in the first one, that was it. Mm-hmm. And then we've got a Serenity metal keychain. Let's go ahead and this is, well, it's a slide thing. I'm like, how does this open?
It's highly complex. They need
instructions. So it's got the Serenity ship.
Nice.
Hanging from the keychain. That seems it could be a little awkward in a pocket or something, but
the only reason I agree with you, because in general, it's a very nicely designed, sleek ship, is because back at the tail of the ship, there are these two prongs that I guess when they were designing the ship, they thought it was for somehow for like nestling into space stations or something, but they feel like tuning fork prongs.
I was thinking just the two jet engine things on the sides that stick out.
Those feel vulnerable, but the tuning fork prongs feel like they'd poke you.
Well, even if they don't, as you're pulling it out, it could catch on something.
Yeah.
So, but still very nice.
Yeah. Well, and that is part of the design of the ship. Yep. So it's not like they chose to put it on. That was being true to the show, putting it on.
If you essentially want a 2-inch replica of the ship as a keychain, that's exactly what this is. And then finally, we've got the Can't Stop the Signal magazine, and it has, what has it got in here this time? Photos from people who've gotten the crates, remembering Ron Glass, complete with, I think, the tweets that were sent out by Fillion, Joss, Alan, Sean, Adam. Then they've got a Show Us Your Saffron contest, a Firefly trivia quiz, and then what's in this crate. This month's mystery mini was either Inara or River.
Now, I will say on the keychain, there's a temptation to hang it from like a 24-inch chain for girls and turn it into a necklace to wear at conventions.
That would be interesting. I would recommend if you do that, don't turn suddenly. If it goes flying, it could hurt somebody.
So picky.
So once again, I'm really enjoying this. Firefly, again, is just a really fun property. The shirt, I think, is awesome. The keychain is good. I like the figures we get every time. I still think, I guess it was last month's on the ship, on the Firefly Serenity itself, was probably the best one they've done.
Yeah.
But this is one that doesn't fail to satisfy every month.
Well, and someone asked on the forum if I had a theory on why we were enjoying this one seemingly more than some of the other boxes. And I pointed out that part of it is quantum mechanics, which supplies so much of what's in the box, it has a lot of stuff on their website that is basically on our wish lists.
Well, I think also, not only is it that, but they are very well themed to specific episodes and characters and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I like the style of the minifigures and whatnot a lot better than the basic style of the Funko.
Well, and yeah, I don't have a single Funko Pop on my wish list at any store. You know what I mean? It's Quantum Mechanics makes things that I'm already buying or wanting to buy.
Yeah.
And so that ups the likely hit rate just automatically.
It's just more to our sensibilities is really what it comes down to. I mean, the other stuff's all fine and good, but if I were to look at one of the figures that typically comes out of this versus one of the Funko Pops, I would not gravitate towards the Funko Pops. They're not bad. They're really well done. It's just the exaggerated head and stuff, that kind of chibi style or whatever it's called, is not as much to my liking as, you know, either the more realistic bigger figures or even the smaller figures. And the nice thing with the smaller ones, you could easily line them up on your desk. It doesn't take up much room.
Yeah.
So anything else on this box? We good?
I think we're good.
Okay, the box in front of me now is the Marvel Collector Core box. The theme is Superhero Showdowns. It is about 11 and a half inches by, we'll say, 7 1/4 by 6.
It's in every other month box, and I believe it's $25 a month.
Sounds right.
Okay. See, I
it
normally
alternates with the DC, which works out pretty well.
Yes. And it's Funko powered. Did I say that? I don't think
you
I
didn't, but it is, so you should, and you did.
Okay, thank you.
I just like to clarify those things.
Check my senility. Well, I knew it was on my mental checklist.
Shall we open this up?
Yes, please.
It's a big box with big flaps and takes a little bit to get open.
I love the flap that's waiting to bash you in the face.
Inside box top has, I'm going to say, 70s era, it looks like, stuff. Captain America going up against the Red Skull. Amazing Spider-Man going up against Doc Ock. It's got actually a cover from Amazing Spider-Man 122. So a lot of kind of classic art adorns the inside of the boxes, which is nice theming.
Mm-hmm.
So the patch this time around is Iron Man versus Ultron. I guess that's one of the showdowns they're referring to. And the pin is the Hulk, but apparently it's they couldn't decide which one to showcase, so they did both the green and the red. The left side is green, the right side is red. There was an episode of Gokaiger, Japanese Super Sentai show, where they had a number of different, you know, colored rangers. I always have red. And one, their shtick was to be able to turn into other rangers. So for Christmas, and Christmas in Japan is kind of more like a Halloween level kind of a thing, one of them turned into the Gokaiger Christmas or whatever, half green, half red. So, and this just kind of reminded me of that. So I thought I'd share the story.
I was thinking that this was the inner turmoil showdown.
No, and the funny thing is, right now, the Totally Awesome Hulk is a different green Hulk. The Red Hulk showing up in US Avengers is not the previous Red Hulk. There's at least 3 She-Hulks going around, I think.
I thought the Totally Awesome Hulk was the modest Hulk.
No. He used to be the 8th smartest person, but I think he got demoted a level. Because when they're bringing out new characters and they need to be smart, they need to be the smartest person on the planet.
So they can appear on an episode of Scorpion?
No. They're certainly not going to write an episode of Scorpion. All right. Continuing this, well, the answer key kind of came out. Remind me to get to that later.
Maybe.
We will start with the shirt, and it's Don't Miss the Battle of the Century, and it's Spider-Man versus Goblin.
It's got that faded, frequently washed already look to
it. Yeah, it's faded. It's a bluish-greenish navy, I guess, navy shirt, but the colors are muted, and it's one of those pre-distressed kind of a thing, so nothing really pops off it. And one of the things I liked about that shirt, like with the Firefly we just did, it's white on black. It's crisp. It pops. It's vibrant. This, it's
the red is so faded, it's hard to call it red.
Yeah, it's almost a maroon, burgundy kind of a thing. And the Goblin's not really green. He's an orangey sort of a thing. And it's not bad.
No.
But it's a stylistic choice that makes it feel very muted, dark, kind of in the shadows.
Yes.
And sometimes that can be a really nice look. For me, I tend to gravitate more towards the things that have a little bit more of a pop to the color, a bit more clarity on the image.
Mm-hmm.
Ready for the next thing?
Yes.
This is a 2-pack Funko Pop exclusive to the Marvel Collector Core, and it is Bullseye versus Daredevil. Now, one thing I'm noticing is it's, I like the boxes that have a little more light in, because these characters seem really dark. It's almost a black, I think it is a black costume Daredevil versus the usual red or whatever.
I think so too.
There are no mouths on these, and the eyes are just big circles. And again, it's not a bad style. It's just this is why I tend not to gravitate to these as much as some of the other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell on the art on the back, more definition of what they were going for with the costumes, but it's very minimalist.
And based on the art on the back, it's almost like he's got, you know, he does in the costume too. Daredevil has like these knife blades or whatever on the wrists or on the back of the hand.
Yeah.
Which is a little, not a little, it's very unusual, I think. So interesting, not bad. Again, not something I would have necessarily gone and bought in and of itself. The next two things are pint-size heroes. We have two of them, and they look to be a Captain America and a Red Skull with the original Captain America shield, kind of the bad-shaped thing versus the circle thing. But it's almost like a bowling pin kind of a body and a huge head on top of it. And these things are...
an inch?
Yeah, tiny. Pint-size. So I don't even feel the need to necessarily get them out of the wrapper.
Well, they remind me, honestly, of toys from the early 80s.
Yeah. And then the Marvel Collector Corps exclusive comic here is a Funko Pop style with a fairly almost photorealistic look to it. In terms of this almost looked like it could have been a product photo of things, although it's clearly not because I don't think they're anywhere near as posable. So it could be 3D rendered too. Of Wolverine versus Sabretooth, the issue is actually Inhumans versus X-Men number one variant edition. What is interesting about that, do you know which of these two is an Inhuman?
Neither.
Correct.
Ah, 2 points.
Both are mutants. So I'm guessing the Inhumans already lost.
Ah, that's tragic. Their show hasn't even started yet.
Yeah. This is the sort of thing, though, that I think is how Marvel has at times inflated their sales. And it's not a bad thing to put them in these boxes. I just don't necessarily appreciate it when those are treated as if they're regular sales.
Well, it goes to my comment that you didn't make the conscious choice to purchase this comic.
Well, and this is already at issue 5, maybe, in the miniseries. So it's not even clear when the numbers first come out that it may be part of this sort of a thing.
Now, I will say that to me, I think putting a number 1 in is better than, say, putting in the number 5 that you're saying came out this month.
Absolutely.
If you're going to hook people, hook them with that first issue and hope they enjoy it and want to pick up the rest.
I agree with the first issue thing, but is a miniseries that's involving 2 major franchises and a lot of backstory and baggage necessarily the best thing?
I agree, and I keep coming back to the comment of it's not a conscious choice to buy it, mm-hmm. So I wonder about its placement in the numbers.
Yeah, but again, its placement in the box makes sense. It is one of the things that's interesting for them to do. I just don't know that I've seen any bump in numbers that seems to be a result of people having gotten something through a subscription box and then actually turned out in stores to go with it.
See, and yeah, that's interesting. It goes in line with the when sales bump up slightly, if at all, because of a movie, people don't seem to stick with a book.
And even then, I usually don't see any direct correlation between a movie and the sales of a comic. Sometimes there is between that and a trade. If there is a particular trade that it's a collection of, Watchmen and 300 is a good example because there's one go-to thing. But Batman, Avengers, X-Men, Superman, Suicide Squad, you pick up some Suicide Squad trade out of which there's a bunch. So it kind of diffuses the influence.
I wonder if the novels for Game of Thrones have, well, because they've had the reprints, though, haven't they, that tied with the covers.
But does a TV show based on a series of books increase the sales of the books?
Yeah.
It's a good question. It's the kind of thing, though, if Loot Crate and these other kinds of boxes, like the Marvel one, had been coming out, say, 10, 15 years ago. Say they had been coming out when The Walking Dead started, and The Walking Dead was included in one. Then when you say, oh, well, it's caught on, there'd be reason to think, oh, well, maybe it could have been because of the Loot Crate or whatever. Now, we know none of those were around back then. It wasn't involved in any of that. It's climbed to be one of the regularly best-selling ongoing titles. So it proves that a title can do that just by being good. So the fact that we've never seen anything that's in a collection or a subscription box start climbing up the charts because people suddenly found it. But again, I don't think that's the intent of these things. It's more of a, hey, here's a cool, you know, variant cover or whatever. You're into the theme or property of the box. So that's what they're going after. Kind of, again, preaching to the choir, which makes sense. So the kind of the answer key card gives some of the stuff, the design stuff around the two-pack Funko Pops, the shirt, the comic, the mini figs or whatever they were, and the patch and the pin. And then it looks like next time around, it's going to be Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. A lot of movies coming out that we should go see, and this is one of them.
Yeah.
But it's not even necessarily the next movie in the theater I'd want to go see. There's a few out there right now, and even between now and then.
It's sad when you're sitting here saying there are too many good movies.
Well, and the reality is we've missed enough over the holiday season, Doctor Strange and stuff, that I finally ordered that on Blu-ray. I could not pre-order that on Blu-ray with Amazon because they didn't have it for there, so I ordered it once it came out. I'll get it, we'll watch it, and get an episode up. So, yeah, good stuff.
You know, the box, as always, is Funko heavy, but because you are a Marvel fan and because, in general, I think the t-shirts are pretty good as convention wear and weekend wear, I think it's still a good box for you. I think if you needed to cut back...
That's just what I was going to say. I think it's a good box worth keeping, but if I had to cut, this would probably be the first one I would cut, because we're down to fairly few.
True.
The Firefly, I think we're both really enjoying. If I had to pick between Marvel and DC, DC would win out for two reasons. One, I'm more of a DC fan than a Marvel fan, just historically. And two, it's on the off month from the Firefly.
Ah, okay.
So, anything else on this box? We good?
I think we're good.
Okay, the package in front of me now is from Arctify. They are back to their basically... kind of 8.5 by 11 super shiny silvery astronaut dinner packaging, which is fine. I think it's actually working out a lot better than the other experiments they've tried. Let's open the pouch up and see what we got.
It's white. It's Marvel. It's got claw marks on the back.
It's a Wolverine shirt. It's black and white. It's basically the black inks or whatever for Wolverine on a white shirt. This looks to go back to early Wolverine. Trying to think which artist I think this is. It could be Cockrum, Dave Cockrum, I'm not sure. But this is not his first appearance in the Hulk, because it's not got the right costume for that, I think. It's the classic brown one, but it is a familiar look. This looks like something that literally was lifted out of a comic book panel.
Logan, as a movie, isn't that hitting theaters soon, I believe?
Yeah. That's actually one of the ones that's on the list to maybe go see, but more likely to watch on Blu-ray when it comes out there, because I don't know if we'll make it to the theater.
That's what I was thinking.
But I think that's why they did this.
That's what I was thinking, and I'm in avoid spoilers mode, so I've been avoiding trailers, commercials, etc. So I don't know how this art theme-wise ties.
Nothing other than it's Wolverine.
That's what I thought. But I think it's a good shirt in terms of quality. I mean, I'm not going to say it's insanely soft, like some have been.
It's soft, though.
Yeah, it's not uncomfortable. Don't get me wrong. It's just some have been, like, baby soft. I wouldn't rate it as really thin, but what I noticed is when you were holding it up to show me, I could see the claws on the back through from the front.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of a see-through sort of an aspect. Not totally, but...
Yeah.
It's funny because it's also got a textured aspect to it, if you feel it.
Yeah, well, and you're putting your hand in the shirt right now, and I can't see your hand.
My point, though, is if you grab in this area and feel up, you'll feel the different textures. So some areas are thicker than others.
Yeah, it's a very interesting fabric.
Yeah.
It feels like a good quality shirt. I was just trying to figure out, you know, because for us girls, when we look at white shirts, it's how see-through is it?
Yeah.
And... I'd have to try it on and see, but...
With a white shirt, it makes the art really pop, so I think it was a good call there.
Yes.
That having been said, I think if it had been a light gray or something like that, it might have worked as well.
Yeah.
Or maybe even a light brown, which is what his costume would have been.
Well, and I think the decision to put the claw marks on the back works.
Mm-hmm. No, it's nice and definitely eye-catching.
Yeah. So, once again, I like their shirt. And for including shipping, basically $12.50, I continue to like that one.
Yeah, this one is a no-brainer to keep. It's well-themed, it's good quality shirts, it's very cost-effective.
Yeah, that may be our best C2E2 discovery.
Yeah, So anything else? We good on this one?
I think we're good.
Hi, John and Kay. It's Nathan again with a Comic Bento subscription opening review, whatever you want to call these things. Again, most of you people who may know me on the forums is ND Horse. And I am a subscriber for about a year and a half now to Comic Bento. It is a subscription box where every month you get a box of four or five trade paperbacks or hardcovers every month. Usually costs about, depending on your subscription and how long it is, usually costs between $22.50 and $25 a box plus $5 shipping. Yeah, like I said before, I've been enjoying these every month. Every month this has a theme. The theme for this month is builders. Don't know much beyond that. Just kind of the description talked about it, how building worlds and such. So I'll just cut to the chase and I'm just going to get right to it. Got this in the mail yesterday and been waiting to open it up. So here we go. Boom, boom, boom. Ah, okay. Off the bat, they've got it all wrapped up nice and tight in some plastic wrap. When you rip it open, you pull them out. I can already kind of see what's on top. And the, like I said, every month comes with a little description card of what's all coming in the box. I'll set that aside if I need more information. But the first one, I obviously recognize this one. It's Invincible Iron Man, Volume 1 Reboot. The recent one by Brian Michael Bendis and, who is that artist? David Marquez. Yeah, I've actually read this one. I enjoyed it. It was a pretty good little story. I think this was this pre-Secret Wars, I believe? I'm not a super regular Marvel reader, so sometimes keeping it all straight is a little tough sometimes. But I remember reading this one and I enjoyed it. I mean, I generally like Brian Michael Bendis. I like his little talky stuff. Actually, just as I was flipping through, there's a great joke between him and Doctor Strange about being the awesome facial hair bros. I remember that joke. I enjoyed it. I thought it was hilarious. So, but anyway, first one in the box is Invincible Iron Man Volume 1 Reboot. Next one, oh, this is one I've been wanting to read. It's a Valiant trade, 4001 AD. I've been kind of keeping up on the Valiant line, and Comic Bento has been pretty good. Every two or three months, there seems to be some different book from Valiant in here. So I built up a nice little Valiant collection, and I've been enjoying the Valiant stories a whole lot. This one, 4001 AD, it's kind of, I know the story spills out of the Rye book. I really have been enjoying the Rye book, mostly for the artwork by Clayton Crane. It's also written by Matt Kent, who I believe has been writing the Rye book too. But it's interesting. Take on the future of the Valiant universe with the country of Japan as some floating city floating above a barren earth and such. But I have been wanting to read this one a lot, so I am very excited for this one. All right. Next one is, let's see, what I do not recognize it, but it is a hardcover book. George R. R. Martin's Wild Cards, The Hard Call, written by Daniel Abraham and illustrated by Eric Battle. Obviously, everyone knows George R. R. Martin for doing Game of Thrones. I love the TV show. Never read any of the books. But I actually have heard of Wild Cards before. I believe George R. R. Martin kind of wrote a bunch of Wild Cards books back in the, 80s or 90s, before Game of Thrones. I don't really know much about it, honestly. I remember vaguely reading some articles about it back around like 1990 or something. Something about some cards and special powers in them. I really don't know much more than that. But like I said, this is from Dynamite Entertainment. I've got a lot of good Dynamite books out of Comic Bento too. I get a kick out of them. So they've got some interesting off-the-wall type of books sometimes. They also do a lot of good licensed products. I've gotten some Green Hornet stuff from them, Highlander, Grimm, Project Superpowers, some interesting stuff. So anyway, this will be pretty interesting. I'm looking forward to checking this one out. And then let's jump over to our last one. This one is called Habitat by Simon Roy. It's from Image Comics. I have absolutely no clue what this one is about. Looks like it's story and art by Simon Roy. This one, has a, this one first printing October 2016. So this one just came out. So I bet you a lot of you guys might, you know, recognize this if you're avid Image Comics reader. Yeah, I'm just kind of flipping through. It looks like, I don't know, some gruesome stuff going on at the very beginning a little bit, but generally not a gruesome book. I don't know. It looks like some type of Aztec city with some future technology or something. Really don't know what's going on in this one. But yeah, I don't know what much else to say about that, but just from a quick glance through, it looks pretty interesting. I know the theme was supposed to be builders. I'm not sure how all these fit into the themes somehow, but somehow they tangentially do somehow very, very loosely fit into themes. I guess Invincible Iron Man's a reboot, so that's a builder thing. And 4001, I guess it's kind of fleshing out the universe in the 4001 part of the Valiant universe. And yeah, I mean, yeah, they all fit to some theme generally. It's not super important that they fit to a theme. But anyway, 4001 AD from Valiant, Invincible Iron Man from Marvel, Wild Cards from Dynamite, and Habitat from Image Comics. So anyway, all in all, I'm actually fairly satisfied just what I've seen so far. Three out of the four are definitely good ones. Iron Man 4001, and I'm looking forward to this Wild Cards. Habitat, we'll see. That's part of actually what I really like about these Comic Bento subscription boxes is that they do a really good job of, you know, they'll hit a Marvel book sometimes, you know, every other month you might get a Marvel book. You know, DC is, I've only gotten one or two of those in my year and a half of subscribing. But other than usually hit maybe one Marvel book, and then the rest of it's all indie publishers. And since I am not the biggest indie publisher reader, you know, I loved just, you know, getting exposed to things that I have no clue about. I kind of like that. And for $20, $20, $25, you know, a month, you can't really beat it for getting four trades for that. I know I've seen some subscription boxes out there where like, hey, you can have five single comics, you know, for like $20 a month. And yes, they are brand new comics, you know, for $3.99 a pop or what have you. But these are, you know, you're talking each of these, say five or six issues in each of these. So, I mean, you're talking like at least 20 single issues worth of stuff here for $25. I mean, it comes out to like about $5 a trade, which is pretty darn cheap. And like I said, this is recent stuff. That Habitat just came out a few months ago. This 4001 AD, I know this just came out. It's got a 2016 copyright, but I know this probably came out towards the end of the year last year. So yeah, when did this Wild Cards come out? I always like to peruse and check out the printing dates on these when they were published. Yeah, like some of these, the Wild Cards book from Dynamite. This is a copyright of 2011. So sometimes they find, you know, the random things that are collecting dust back in the back of Diamond Comics or somewhere. But I know I talked with some of the guys at Comic Bento one time at C2E2 last year, and they told me, they were just kind of giving me a little description of how they find all of their books for it. They generally, I was talking to the main guy, he was talking about how they generally try to come up with a theme like 6 months out, and then they go out to the publishers and just kind of ask them like, hey, what kind of deals do you guys got? What will you sell us for $2, $3, $4 a book, you know? And actually, I think they do that first, and then they build a theme around those. So sometimes they find some interesting stuff that the publishers are willing to dump at a decent price. But I wouldn't I wouldn't say the word dump, but you know, a good little find that you can have. So, and it's always interesting too. Sometimes I, you know, as John always looks through the sales numbers, it's always interesting, kind of checking what I got in my Comic Bento against what you see on the Diamond sales lists. Sometimes they show up on there, sometimes they don't show up on the Diamond list, but, usually, you'll see some random thing that sells like 2,500, 3,000 copies, and you have no clue why the heck that one should be like number 15 on the list. And a lot of times it could be because of Comic Bento. I bet you this Invincible Iron Man, I remember seeing something on the trades list a couple months ago of like Invincible Iron Man shot up on the trades list for some random reason. This could be a very good reason why it did. And again, like I said, I'll check out all these other ones to see what's up there. So, but anyway, that is what I have for the February Comic Bento subscription box. Again, my name's Nathan, ND Horse on the forum. Thank you for your time, guys. Back to you, John and Kay.
First off, I want to thank Nathan for sending in another clip on the Comic Bento. I really enjoy listening to these. Hopefully Nathan will continue to do it. He's doing a great job. I do have a little more information on that Wild Cards, the Hard Call hardcover. I've actually got the miniseries that it collects, which was originally done by Dabble Brothers, the final issue of which was published by Dynamite. It collects, like I said, the six-issue miniseries. Now, Wild Cards is something that I've read a couple of the books. There's about 24 novels-length books on this. Some are actual novels, some are anthologies of short stories, and George R.R. Martin and Melinda Snodgrass were the editors of that shared universe. And part of what's cool is shared universes are a staple of comics, but I'm not sure that they're really that common outside of comics and, you know, sci-fi novels and whatnot. Sure, there's corporate-owned stuff, Star Wars, Star Trek, that kind of thing, but not really a shared universe like this. The basic premise of Wild Cards is there was, it's an alternate history thing, and things changed after World War II when an alien virus hit Earth that could rewrite people's DNA and mutate the survivors. If they would turn out kinda not so good, they'd be called Jokers. If they turned out as kind of a archetypal superhero or whatever, they would be known as Aces, and you could fall kinda somewhere in between in that spectrum. It's kind of sort of the precursor, but not quite, of the Inhumans and the Terra Genesis and the Terragon Mists and stuff that's going on right now over in Marvel. And I say kind of sort of because the first installment of Wild Cards was somewhere in the mid to late 80s. Obviously, the Inhumans predate that by quite some, you know, years, actually, about two decades. But it's kind of sort of how the Marvel Universe is now with, oh, you could turn out and have powers. Maybe they're good, maybe they're not. It was a lot of fun, and my understanding is the Wild Card universe started out of a role-playing game that George R.R. Martin ran out in wherever he was living, somewhere, Arizona, New Mexico, wherever. And a lot of the writers that were part of his circle of friends were in that game, and they did a lot of the stories. So there's some really wonderful stuff in all of those novels and whatnot. And I don't recall exactly the contents of this miniseries that's in that collection, but it's fun stuff. So definitely worth checking out. And again, that's really cool that Comic Bento was able to get a hardcover and put it in there and stuff. That's a lot of fun. So Nathan, thanks again for sending in the clip. Hopefully you continue to do it. And if other people are getting other sorts of boxes like this and they want to send in clips, drop me an email, talk to me, let me know about it, and we'll work something out. So with that, we'll call it an episode.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.